Last year, we discussed the distinctions between Hagalah, Libun, and Hadacha. So tonight we'll discuss some of the specifics that relate to Hagalah in terms of how one kashers using Hagalah. When one utilizes the methodology of Hagalah, which is designed, as I mentioned in yesterday's shiur, to remove the tam that was absorbed by the kli, before the Hagalah, the kli has to be scrubbed down in order to remove the dirt or whatever rust is attached to the kli. It's always a possibility that some of the mamasha shel iser is attached to the kli under the area that's rusted. If you take a look in the Mishnah Berurah in Simen Tof Nun Aleph, the Mishnah Berurah clearly indicates this. Tof Nun Aleph in Sivkotten Chav Beis. This Sivkotten refers to the din that's mentioned above, namely, the Mechaber writes in Sif Gimel that kol chaluda, that any rust that is on the kli has to be removed prior to the act of Hagolah. The Mishnah Berurah explains over here in a very elaborate, detailed kind of fashion. Sivkotten Chav Beis, he writes, the Torah mentions the material. The Torah mentions the particular chamarim that are involved. Zov, kesef, nechoshes, klomar, says the Mishnah Berurah, rak es hazov. That's what the Torah tells us. That has to be kashered. The hainuk she'en sham chaluda. There's no rust. Rak zov bilvan. Only the material that we are referring to. Then, says the Mishnah Berurah, Mo'eles Hagolah lehaflit habalua. Then the Hagolah will succeed in removing that which was absorbed. Avak she'esh sham chaluda, but whenever there's a rust situation, yesh lochu shem yesh sham mashu menachometz ha'chaluda mechaseyu, as I just mentioned, then the shash is that there is underneath the area with rust, there is some substance, there's some mamoshes. Ulezeh lo mahani Hagolah. Ki'en Hagolah lemashu be'en. Hagolah can only remove the tam, as we mentioned yesterday, from the shach, from the taz. Look at the Mishnah Berurah's language. Rust. Reish ala samach tet. Amazing. Whenever I saw this terminology, and I saw it years ago, I was reminded of the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Ayin Hey. In Siman Ayin Hey, the Mishnah Berurah is talking about issues relating to tznius. And he speaks about, in terms of covering a particular area, so he talks about the knee should be covered, and he spells knee, kuf nun yud aleph. So I guess this was probably the model when Hagoyin HaMashia finds his Tzad Rodigus Moshe, often he, as we know, transliterates, and most of the Sefer has a lot of English transliteration, so I guess it comes from the Mishnah Berurah. That was the paradigm. That was the model that they used. So here the Mishnah Berurah uses the term rust, which my understanding is that this is an English term, but we have to trace the source of this. Anyway, the Mishnah Berurah goes on. Shekshegorin osam yisham yesham kama afurim. Often when you scrape off the rust, so you'll discover underneath afurim. And then we're worried, says Mishnah Berurah, so az yesh lachos shem yesh tachtel mashu mamoshes ha'isar ba'ayin v'achaludu mechaseyu. However, if you only have a discoloration, which is often the case, pots that I use actually extensively, often there's a discoloration, but there's no mamoshes. There's no substantive element that's there. That's what Mishnah Berurah writes in the next two, three lines, that you have what he calls avlanein machalul mamoshes klal makmari bevag kemoshenim salafam sheish shachus admimus betzarapnimi shalakli shonakorin flecking. That's also a commonly used term. Flecking refers to ksamim and kpeda. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah indicates over here, that if there's mamoshes, then that's a problem, that Hagolah can only remove an Issa that's absorbed within the walls of the Kli, but it does not remove Mamoshes Shel Issa. So we have to ensure, we have to make sure there's no substantive Issa there. Agaburcha, those Kalim that Akasha threw Libun on the fire, unlike Hagolah, do not have to be cleaned before the Hechsher. This is a very important distinction between Kalim that are subject to Hagolah and Kalim that are subject to Libun. Again, as we explained yesterday, since the function of Libun is to burn, literally, to destroy, to completely eviscerate any element that's in the clay, that's embedded in the clay, there's no need to clean it prior to that. Mashenkin Hagola, which is only designed to remove the tam, that's why the Mishnah Berurah here stresses the importance of removing any mamoshes. And this is also found in the Mishnah Berurah in Tafnun Aleph Sifkat Chav Dalid, where commenting on the halacha that you require libun, says the Mishnah Berurah, "Hainu she'aniya kecholim baros ubelibun ein tzarich lahavir achaluda ki ha'esh yavir esakol." Mishnah Berurah writes clearly that the fire will destroy everything. Regarding the libun kal, as I said yesterday, is bimkom hagola. So that's essentially, in terms of libun kal, one can actually use it in bimkom hagola, essentially, kalim that are not used over the fire, that are used with liquid. We mentioned that most pots actually that are used for cooking food are used with water or soup. So the pot of its also becomes also in a liquid medium, or let's say a spoon that was placed in a pot over the fire with water or soup in it. So those kelim don't need libun, only require hagola. And as I mentioned, either libun kal can be used as well. Libun kal refers to putting the pot over the fire where it can burn a piece of straw or a thread once the pot is hot enough. So again, libun kal has the same status as hagola, the same halachic status. But going back to the issue of rust, if the rust has no mamoshes, when you scrub the rust, there's no rust material, but rust coloration or blotches, what the Mishnah Berurah calls flecking. So it doesn't have to be removed, and that's exactly what we just mentioned. Now, if you have a kli with a small opening with a mouth, for example, you have a bottle, where it's impossible to remove rust from the inside, then it should not be kasha. The Mishnah Berurah also mentions this in Siv Katan Chavav. Take a look in Chavav. This is going on a statement made above, where we have the Shulchan Aruch writes very clearly, when you have what's called gumos, so then the halacha is that you require libun, and then the Rama says, v'hanadon shel sakinim, ein la takona ba'agola, v'asa lachnis ba'asakim v'pesach. Says the Mishnah Berurah, v'isha i'efshar in sikon chavav, v'nakro heitev b'fnim, im lo she'yiftach ha'tfiros, v'yinakro heitev, v'asa filo ha'gola ein tzorich. And then he writes, kli she'piv tzor, if I have a kli, it has a very narrow aperture, a narrow opening. So the Mishnah Berurah indicates that if I have a kli that has cracks in them, it also has to be cleaned out very, very well. If it cannot be cleaned, then the hagola is of a questionable nature, whether one can actually go ahead and do hagola on such a kli is yesh makom to be machmir with reference to that matter. There's a shaila in the poskim, as a matter of fact, regarding, let's say, kashering knives, where the knives consist of separately attached handles, which means the blade is one segment and the knife handle is another segment. But of course, they're connected together. They're mechubar. And now the question is, in poskim, whether those knives can be kashered. Some say if there's no crack, but the handle and the blade are together, then it can be kasher. The Aruch HaShulchan discusses this in Siman Tafnun Aleph, Sivkot Yud. Those kelim with cracks that cannot be cleaned. So the ezer is to kasher with libun on the fire, to kasher the area of the cracks through libun kal perhaps, and libun will burn out the area around the cracks, and then you can do regular hagola. This is also discussed in the Mishnah Berurah in Tafnun Aleph, in Sivkot Lamed Gimel. Take a look at the halacha in the Mishnah Berurah, since we are reading the Mishnah Berurah, which is a good thing. So the Mishnah Berurah comments on the Ramah. Ramah at the end of Sif Dalid. Dabar Shedino Bahagola, something that we require Hagola. Rak Sheyeshbo Sdokim, but something that has cracks in it. Oshimachmirin Lilabno, Sagi Beliban Kal Kazeh. So the Mishnah Berurah writes on that in Sif Kotan Lami Gimel, Rak Sheyeshbo Sdokim, Ratzalomar. And as I said, this is the issue of cracks. So if one uses libun, it will burn out the area around the cracks, and then you can go ahead and do a regular hagola. Another very significant halacha with reference to hagola is that a kli should not be kashered until 24 hours have passed since its last usage. That's a well-known din And the reason of the Paskim is that Hagala is different from Libun, as we mentioned already a number of times. Libun burns the Iser out, destroys the Iser, but Hagala simply extricates the Iser that was absorbed in the clay, and now that Iser that was extricated is now in the water. So once the Iser is in the water, the Zoris of Shash will go back from the water into the clay, and the pot will once again reabsorb the Iser from the water. Therefore, the Paskim say what we should do is wait till the clay is no longer a Ben Yomba. The clay is no longer within 24-hour usage, till 24 hours have passed. And then the time in the clay, of course, is what the Gemara calls Nesin Tam Liv Gam. It's not considered to be a Tam B'Shevach, but the Tam is weakened. And once it's extracted from the walls into the water, it has no koach to go back and once again render the clay Osur. So one should not kasher any clay till 24 hours has passed from the last usage. And this is mentioned clearly also in Shulchan Aruch. Take a look in Siman Tov Nun Beis, and you'll see in Sif Beis, that's how the Shulchan Aruch actually quotes this halacha in a very clear kind of fashion. He writes, Tov Nun Beis, Sif Beis, Yesh li zor mi lahagu klei abasur klei cholab biyachad, elam kein echa mehem edem ben yomo, the kolshken klei shal isor. One has to wait till the klei is no longer, has not been used for 24 hours. That's the practice that one is not going to go ahead and do Hagola for a Kli. That's a Ben Yombo. Mishnah Berurah writes both in Yud Ches and Yud Tes. And Yud Ches, he explains the halacha, why in Yud Zayin already, why Ben Yombo is mutter, because the Tam is a Tam Pogum, can no longer ask the Kli. And then he points out in El Ben Yombo, the time that is nivla from a ben yomo is called a not by not the hetera. It's not considered to be a substantive time. And then in Yud Ches, Mishnah Berurah explains that even if both of them are ben yomo, but you have shishim, that also will take care of the problem. But this is the practice regarding Hagola, that one way is 24 hours. Now, in terms of the actual procedure for Hagola, that's discussed in the beginning of Siman Tov Nun Beis, also a very important din that not always people are aware of. Namely, once the kli was cleansed and it's no longer a ben yomo, here's how we kasher it. And this is mentioned right away in the beginning of Siman Tov Nun Beis. The Mechaber actually has details with reference to this halacha. We take a pot, fill it with water, and we place it over the fire, but the water has to boil. The water has to bubble over. That's exactly how the Shulchan Aruch actually indicates. If you take a look in the Ramah notes, the very beginning of Sif Aleph, the water has to be boiling. The Mishnah Berurah says, "Afilu hayat zolef b'hem, kol zman shein hamayim malim risichasam, ein hamaflitim." If there's no boiling, bubbling situation, means once the hot water is bubbling, then we take the kli that has to be kashin, and then we can immerse it into the hot water. Number three, we should try to immerse the kli that requires hechsher into the hot water. It should be completely immersed, it should be completely covered. Number four, often the kli is too large for it. That's what Mishnah Berurah talks about as well. If the kli is too large and will not fit under the water completely, so one can go ahead and kasher the kli in two segments. We mentioned this is a distinction between tevilas kelim that has to be done at one time, and hagolas kelim that one can go ahead and divide it into two different segments. First, place one half of the pot into the hot water, kashering that half. Afterwards, turn it upside down, invert it, put in the second half, and now the whole kli is considered to be kashered under those circumstances. And this also, if you take a look in Siman Tov Nun Aleph, and there you'll read in Sif Yud Aleph, that there as well, the Mechaber addresses this issue. In Siman Tov Nun Aleph, Sif Yud Aleph, the Mechaber writes, Machva shemetagnim bo, muteres ba'agola v'mi haruka. He's talking about a long situation, a long machvad, a long frying pan. Meisim chetzia v'hofich od, meisim chetzia ha'acher, dimi aruka b'yoseh, malab nabi emtza. It can be done in segments. The act of kashering, that is the way one will go ahead and kasher a large kli. It doesn't have to be done by vasachas, it can be divided into several segments. Number five, in order to avoid losing the kli in hot water, I just give you an Eitz HaTovah Kamashmalon, which has occurred many times. The kli should be placed into a basket, into a kind of reshet with a handle. And this basket with the treifa kli inside the basket is immersed in the pot of hot water, thereby kashering the treifa kli. Beyond that, the Poskim point out, don't put too many kelim in the same time in this basket. Because if you do so invariably, there will be contact, there will be tangency between the kelim, and the hot water will not be able to get to the kli at the point of contact. Therefore, if a person wants to kasher many pieces of silverware, he can spread them out in a basket full of holes. As long as the pieces of silverware are separate, disparate, one separate from the other, but are not piled up one over the other, because then it's not considered to be kasher properly. And the basket will be immersed in the hot water, and then obviously the kashering process can take place under those circumstances. This is also discussed as well by the Mishnah Berurah. Again, if you look in Siman Tefillin Beis, you want to see it inside, you can actually examine it. Mishnah Berurah comments on this in Siman Tefillin Beis, Sivkot and Chaf Aleph and Chaf Beis. He speaks about using a sal menukav, using a basket that has nikavim, that has in it actually holes, a kind of reshet. And then he points out that under those circumstances where there's minimal contact between the kelim, or no contact rather, as he writes in Chaf Beis, the b'makom negiyosim lo salki harasicha, abogad delin and tvila in chotzitzin, regarding tvila, that would not be a problem. That would not be a chatzitza. But regarding agola, that constitutes a chatzitza. So one can actually, and I've seen this a number of times, where people actually take a kli and place it in hot water, and they attach a string to the kli. And there, by means of the string, they're able to lower the kli into the hot water. When it's kashered, then you simply remove it by means of using the string. But here again, the string should not be tied so tightly around the kli, because if the string is tied tightly around the kli, that'll prevent the hot water from coming into contact with the kli in the area of the kesher, where the knot has been placed. The hot water has to surround the kli to be kashered. Only then is it considered to be a kosher kind of hagolah. One also has to make sure that the water is bubbling the entire time of kashering. Often the water cools down for a moment or a few moments. So if the kli placed on it, and we're putting a number of kelim one after the next on an ongoing basis, then we could have a problem. So one has to make sure the water is still bubbling, and only then add the additional kli. This is also mentioned by the Mishnah Berurah. These two or three simanim in the Mishnah Berurah are outstanding. The Mishnah Berurah is just incredible in terms of getting down to very, very nitty gritty details. Mishnah Berurah is telling you literally pratim upirte pratim with reference to this matter. He writes this in Sivkot Ches. Take a look in Tefillin Beis. If you want to see this part of the Mishnah Berurah, in the middle there, he points out that v'ine teva hamayim denaychi mirsichasan, that often the water will no longer be bubbling. Shemachnisim b'keilim tzonanim lahagdil. You're putting there kelim that are cold. You're putting there for the purpose of agola. Okay, tzorech lahamtin b'chol kli at shiyalo hamayim v'habuos. Once again, there has to be this bubbling constantly on an ongoing, consistent kind of basis. V'yech lahazir l'magilim azeh. Kei noagim azeh kalus. U'magilim b'mihiru zeh azeh. V'ena medakkin liros imalim resicha. From what I've seen in Eretz Yisrael, actually, often they have here a range, and the range is on the fire, and they have a massive pot. And so now, literally, many, many people come to the Baal Agola, as they call him, and they're going to go ahead and immerse the pot, or pots, one after the next, but because it's on a range with a fire beneath it, so obviously, once the water is bubbling, it will continue to bubble. Now, I just want to mention, we shouldn't point this out, that the Poskim also discuss it. How long does the kli have to remain in the hot water not to be kashered? Once it's there momentarily, so then that's sufficient. The kli is kashered. And the poskim indicate it's not advisable to keep the kelim there too long in the hot water. If you do, you might be undoing or completely negating the purpose of kashering. The purpose of kashering is to, as I mentioned, to extract the time from the kli into the water, and you keep it there for an extended period of time, it might go back in the kli where it came from. That's how Tosfos writes in Maseches Avodah Zarah, and how we've shown and point out that almost as if the molecules are going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. We once asked the Maran Harav Soloveitchik Zatzal, in terms of the actual realia, as it's known in modern Hebrew, the reality of this, does this have to mesh necessarily with scientific data? And in general, does your day have to mesh with scientific data? I'm talking about all the dinim of Bliya and all the halachas of Tam Ki Ikar. And the answer is that the halacha has its own postulates, its own principles, and are not necessarily in sync. So those who feel that they have to somehow coordinate or find somehow consistency between science and halacha, that is not a correct premise or halacha. There's a lot to talk about in that matter. That's not the function of this shiur. I just mentioned that the Achagav is an editorial note, which is significant. So here again, one has to make sure that one removes the pot that's going to be kashered. One should not leave the pot there. And even though we mentioned already earlier that since we're only kashering a pot that's Eid ben Yomov, so why are we worried? What's the problem? We said the time is not a time of shevach, it's a time of gam, so it shouldn't really be a problem in terms of once again being resuscitated, as it were. But the chatchila, the idea is that one should not leave the pot that is kashered in the water for extended period of time, but rather it's only there for a few short seconds and then take it out before a potential reabsorption of Isur might take place. And this is discussed, as I said, by the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, by the Mishnah Berurah over here, by the Shaar HaTzion, and many, many poskim talk about this issue. What about a very large...
Are we saying that it gets extracted immediately, but it gets absorbed in a longer period of time? Is that what we're saying as a cloud?
I don't know if that's correct. I've been told that's what scientists have told me. I've spoken to scientists about this, actually to chemists, and they told me the extraction occurs more quickly than the reabsorption. Reabsorption takes a few more seconds exactly. It seems to me that here we have the Mishnah and Peah that applies. I don't exactly know what the Shear is, neither for the absorption. What?
If it happened at the same speed, it wouldn't work because the moment
correct.
It's excluded,
it
it's already
not the same speed. I agree with you. It's not the same speed, unquestionably. However, the only question is what the shear is, that's not so clear. What about a very large kli that's usur and needs kashering, and we can't find a larger kli than that to immerse it in? So the Paskim say, let's say I have people here were not present when I learned in Yeshiva and Itri. So there was this is actually a true story. And since I'm supposed to entertain you as well, so perhaps I'll do so. Yeah. We had a Torah Nut in the yeshiva in the kitchen, in the mitbach. All of us took turns. There's a very large yeshiva. It was about 500 bochim, 500 talmidim many, many years ago. And there was a massive range in the kitchen. And on that range was the cholent pot. I have never seen such a pot in my entire life. The cholent pot was probably the size of, I'm not exaggerating, it was the size of probably, in terms of meters, I don't know exactly how to measure, but I would venture to say it was literally approximately 5 feet in terms of its width, and approximately, literally, probably several feet in terms of its height. It was a massive pot. And so one Friday night when I was in Montoranut, so I discovered when I came into the kitchen, it looks like that there was I heard some sloshing going about, and I was trying to do some Shabbat work and investigate to see exactly what the source of that is. And I did not know where it was coming from. And I decided to approach the pot, which was very, very hot. And I approached it gingerly and even sheepishly, I could say. And then I realized that the sloshing was in the pot. So I assumed it was the pot that was simply boiling away. And no, it was not a cat. But anyway, I assumed the pot was actually boiling away, and that was the source of it. But it didn't sound like the pot was simply boiling away. It was a far different kind of tones that were being utilized. Anyway, so I decided to go, and I went to look for a bit of a ladder. I found the ladder, and then I discovered the fellow who worked in the kitchen was inside the pot. That is to say, the gentleman, and apparently he was doing, I guess, what you might call Hagasa. Hagasa is Zasa on Shabbos Mishum Bishol. And apparently he thought he was the Kochlefel. He somehow was the Megis. Apparently what he noted, that the cholent was very thick. It was not a very, it was not a cholent that was apparently one that would be ready on Shabbos morning. And so he decided to go inside, and he had inside the fireman's boots, and he had these massive hip fireman boots that were on. And So he was busy doing Hagasa. And then when he saw me peering over the pot, he was astounded that there was someone actually who somehow caught him in the act, so to speak. And that was fascinating. Of course, what happened was is that I was so shocked and in such a state of, I guess one could say, stupefaction, that I did not know what to do. So I figured to myself, well, The Gemara says, Yisichenu l'acherim. So I'll tell my chavrusa. And that's it. We'll keep the two of us, we'll keep the secret, and the yeshiva will not know anything about it. Well, I told my chavrusa that probably was an error. So the next morning, which is Shabbos morning, the Rosh Yeshiva happened to be there, Zechatzal Dibracha, and when the time came for the cholam to be served, the cholam was served, and the Rosh Yeshiva realized very quickly not a soul was eating the cholam. Not one bachur in the yeshiva is touching this cholam. And there were approximately 250 Israeli bachrim and 250 Anglo-Saxon bachrim, not one. So the Shiva was curious to know what exactly. He right away was suspicious, was chayshay. Anyway, that was the story, the Cholon story in my yeshiva many, many years ago. So again, the question is, what do you do if I have a very large kli that's asur and needs kasher? You can't find a larger kli to immerse it in. So the Paskim say in this situation, the Derech HaGadol follows, that we take the kli itself, we fill it up to the top with hot water till it bubbles. While it's bubbling, then one takes a hot stone or one takes a hot piece of metal and drops it into the pot of hot water. And now the water will spill over the rim of the kli. And as a result, the whole pot is now kasher. So this, of course, is a very unique method of doing this. The Gemara speaks about this in Avodah Zarah, the sugya of Gadafna, very famous sugya. When we kasher kelim, again, just to mention what I pointed out earlier, this is not generally the way it's done. But when we have a massive kli, you basically have not much of a choice how you're going to go ahead and kasher that kli. I want to repeat again what I said earlier, because this is very significant. The handle of the kli has to be kashered as well. Handles of kli also absorb isa. This is also mentioned in Siman Tov Nun Aleph. Take a look again. The Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch speaks about handles of a kli. And this is found in Sif Yud Beis. In Tov Nun Aleph, Sif Yud Beis, says the Mechaber kol ha-kelim tzarech lehagol yudoseim kemosam. You have to also do hagola on the handle of the kli, because the handle of the kli absorbs the isa. But the Pesukim say regarding handles, it's enough to kasher the handles with irui. Irui means you pour hot water from a kli rishon, means I take a kettle of hot water that comes from a kli rishon, that was agabi ha'esh, bubbling over the fire, and you take the water and pour it from the kettle onto the handles. And if the handles are made of plastic, they can be kashered through irui as well. We spoke yesterday about plastic, and machlokes ha'poskim in terms of kashering it, whether you can kasher it, you cannot kasher it. There's a very beautiful sefer that was published many, many years ago, decades ago. Probably only one or two people in front of me are familiar with the sefer. Shor Mamitzion Ba'alocha. It was a sefer written on Kitzur Shulchan Aruch by a goyin, an absolute goyin, a Rav Roin, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And he was one of the first svarim of this genre, where he actually goes ahead and is malakit for many, many gdolei achronim that he brings to bear on many, many issues in terms of halacha l'maaseh. So he discusses it in that sefer. But whenever we have handles, we have to clean the area around the handles or the cracks in the place of contact between the handles and the kli itself to make sure no isur or mamoshes is hidden in the handles under the cracks. And those areas have to be cleaned out very well. And for that matter, you also have to kasher the covers of the kelim. Not only the kli itself has to be kashered, but the covers of the pot that's used also have to be kashered. And what's called in Hebrew, michseh kelim. The cover of the kli has to be kashered from a kli rishon mamish. It cannot be kashered through irui. So simply pouring water from a kli rishon over the cover is not acceptable. The covers themselves have to be placed into a kli rishon. You must have the pot of bubbling water again over a fire. You immerse the cover into that pot of water, thereby kashering the kisui of the kelim in a kli rishon. This is also found in Siman Tov Nun Aleph. Look at the Mishnah Berurah in Tov Nun Aleph. He comments on this in Siv Kotten Pei Aleph. You take a look in Pei Aleph. He discusses it in that context. So the custom is actually right after the kashering. I mentioned this yesterday. We rinse the kelim in cold water in order to prevent the kelim from reabsorbing the isur used in the hot water process. But the kashering is kosher even if it's not rinsed, because the kelim are already not a benyomo, and any time is already a nosin tam livgam. But the chatchila, one should rinse the kli in cold water. That's the proper thing to do. That's also mentioned by the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Tov Nun Beis. If you take a look over there in the Sif Kotten Lamed Dalid, the Mishnah Berurah indicates that, and it's quoted actually from the last Mechaber in Siman Tov Nun Beis. Writes, Noagim Lishtov Hakli B'mayim Karim Achar HaGolam Yad. You rinse the kli with cold water right after Hagolah. Mr. Brew explains over there, if you don't do it, we're not worried because it's an Eda Ben Yomo, and it's also before this Mad Isur, as we mentioned yesterday, that it may very well be Hetera Bala. That's a Machlokes of Rishonim, whether Chametz before Pesach, Hetera Bala, Isura Bala, but there are enough Paskim who say Hetera Bala, and therefore Yesha Milismoch in that situation. Someone asked me if I kasher a kli for Pesach, what type of pot do I use? Do I use a Chametz digger pot? Do I use a Pesach digger pot? So the answer is that one could use either one. If I use a Chametz digger kli, so first you have to make sure it's kashered in order to make it eligible to kasher the other kelim for Pesach. So I'm going to use a chametz dig kli, so I have to make sure the kashrut as well. Even the kli, which is chametz dig, is not a ben yomo, but because of chumra the pischa, because we have machmir, when it comes to Yoni Pesach, you have to be machshir the chametz dig kli as well. So now, as I said, I can go ahead and use the chametz dig kli that I kashrut in order to kasher kelim for Pesach. It's not considered to be a problem. Similarly, if I want to kasher with a pesach dig kli, I have to re-kasher the pesach dig kli in order to use it for Pesach. All this is discussed in the Mishnah Berurah, in the Shaar Tzion, again, Simen Tofnun Beis. You'll take a look in the Sivkot and Tezvav, in the Mishnah Berurah, Sivkot and Yud. Again, a discussion on this particular topic. If I have a set of Milchga silverware, and someone asked me already in the last few days, they would like to exchange it to be used for Fleishah, they could use, what's the din? I'm not really addressing that topic. I'm just going to broach it very gingerly and very superficially. Can I kasher them for flesh to use, or to change flesh to silver for milk to use? So the silverware is not trade, but it's either flesh or milk. And I want to change the status. So our minig is not to do it. We do not change silverware from flesh to milk, nor do we kasher from milk to flesh. This is discussed by the Magen Avraham in Shulchan Aruch. And the reason is because if we start switching from chalabit to psari, or vice versa, from flesh to milk, and milk to flesh, of course there's going to be confusion. And therefore, the ideal, of course, is to use the same set of silverware for chalavi and a different set of silverware for psari. And we're always frightened of confusion. So in order to avoid it, it's our custom. It's a very strong minhag not to kasher from milchus to fleishiks and vice versa. That's the minhag Yisrael, which I believe is universally accepted. The Chassam Sofer has a comment. He mentions regarding Pesach, if we're already being machshir kelim, and we want to use them for Pesach Digger purposes, so perhaps then one will be able to be machshir Milcha Digger Kelim and in effect convert them into Fleisha Digger Kelim and vice versa, because the Kamona was the kasher from Chametz to Pesach. Once it's kashered, then we can take advantage of the kashering and switch it from Milcha to Fleishiks and vice versa. This is a Chiddush of the Chassam Sofer that he mentions. I'm just mentioning it there, Chagav. Again, the Magen Avraham in Siman Tov Kuf Tes, that's where he discusses what I spoke about earlier, that we do not, our practice is not to convert one to the other, either fleishiks to milchiks, or milchiks to fleishiks. Again, the Magen Avraham explains if it was permissible to go ahead and switch from one to the other, so then, of course, then obviously people will come to a very unfortunate and mistaken, erroneously mistaken maskana, namely there's no need for two sets of kelim. Why should I have two sets of sakumim? Why should I have one for chalabi and one for psari? But I can buy one set and every time be machshir them. Between each usage, I'll go ahead and kasher the kli. So again, this is something which is very much ensconced in Minhagi Klal Yisrael, not to do this kind of switching from pesedik, from milchik to fleishiks and fleishiks to milchiks. And again, the Primogodim gives a similar eitzah also in Siman Tov Kuf Tes. Similar to the Magen Avraham, he writes over there that I can make the kelim treif, and once I'm already kashering it from treif to kosher, then I can switch it from fleishiks to milchiks or vice versa. So both the Chassam Sofer and the Prima Godim have a similar kind of eitzah with using different methodologies, different circumstances. But again, b'di'evet, that question that person asked me, what's the din b'di'evet? That a person did not ask a shayla, kashi kelim from milchiks to fleishiks, of fleishiks to milchiks means he violated the minog Yisrael of not kashering one to the other. So what's the halacha? What's the status of that kli? So there's the Brijana Rav, the Shalchuv's Masham, has a tshuva about this. But the Eved, he points out those kelim that are kashered, we don't ask for them because it's only a minog ba'alma. It's not a real isur. And the precaution of the Magen Avraham is only a minog. And but the Eved, one can use the kelim for whatever one intends to do so. But this, as I said, is a subject of a lot of discussion among the Gdolei HaPoskim, which is not the object of this year. You'll take a look in the Deber Tzina Rav and the Be'er Moshe, and also you'll look in Orchas Chaim and the Shelas Yeshurim and in the Marsham. There's a lot of discussion on this topic, but as I said, the Minhag Yisrael is pretty clear in terms of not kashering from Pleishis to Milchus or vice versa. But this is only when one is kashering using the process of Hagolah. If we're talking about Hagolah, then we don't go and convert one to the other. Hagolah, again, using hot water. However, if one is kashering through Libum, then the Shah Melech Paskins in Perek Dalid, Ilchus Yomtiv, that he's matched to change from Fleishiks to Milchus and Milchus to Fleishiks, because he argues the Hakpada, the Magen Avraham, is only switching to Hagolah. But in Vayel Libum, then you'd be allowed to go ahead and switch from Basa to Chalav and vice versa. This is quoted by the Shem Mitzvah Ba'alocha. That's where I saw this Shah HaMelech. And although he's Matir, the Prima Godin writes that even with Libun, the Chatchila, it should be Machmir. So that's generally the practice, as I said. I just wanted to provide a little bit of an overview regarding this matter. Let me just mention, by way of Siyam, one or two items that relate specifically to Pesach that I plan on discussing in Yes Hashem tomorrow night in the shiur that I'm giving to women. They'll be more specific about different types of kelim. Let's talk about porcelain. Many people ask me about porcelain has a status of klicheres of earthenware, cannot be kasher. The Mishnah Berurah himself in Siman Tuf Nun Aleph, you can actually, has reference to this. The Mishnah Berurah actually points this out. If there's a hefset, a considerable loss of money, then it's kedai to ask your LOR, your local Orthodox rabbi, ask a Shelas Rav regarding that matter. There might be other mitigating factors, and perhaps there is an Eitzah, had a kasher porcelain kelim. Someone actually, as they say in simple Hebrew, nisa the shaget haseichel shali, with reference to this question in the last two or three days. But generally, the practice is not to kasher those kelim. That's generally what we assume, and that's something that's more or less accepted on the part of Klal Yisrael. I'll mention that kelim that are aser must be kashered, so till they're kashered, you should not use them. Someone told me that he thought they could use them b'derech harai, and only b'derech keva they should not be used. But rather, one should not be more heter to use a tray for kli, even for cold food. Temporarily, one could argue from time to time it's permitted to use for cold food as long as it's rinsed carefully. This is already mentioned by the Mishnah Berurah as well in Siman Tuf Nun Aleph. Mishnah Berurah actually has in Siv Katan Tes Zayin. So there the Mishnah Berurah actually has reference to this halacha. Derech Harai, he writes over there, Mutu l'shtamash b'om hadicha v'shiv shev tchila. So if a person actually, Derech Harai, put cold food into a tray for dish, the tray for dish is washed properly, one can b'derech harai put cold food in the tray for dish. B'kvias, of course, it's also. I remember as a youngster, there were very few kosher restaurants in New York City. I'm talking about La Ciudad de Nueva York. That's called the city of New York. So there were very few restaurants in that city, kosher restaurants. So many people had a practice. They would go to, there was a place called Farm Food that sold all types of vegetarian items, salads and the like. But they also had trefa food in that restaurant. And there were frum Jews who used to eat there. So I remember when I went to yeshiva, I'm talking about yeshiva ktana, not exactly the same kind of yeshiva ktana that exists in this country, but let's call it parochial school, day school, elementary school. Perhaps Rabbi Weiss will correct us in terms of what the proper nomenclature is, but any of the above that I mentioned. So many people that had that practice, including people in my own family. And I remember I had a Rebbe, maybe in grade 3 or 4, who told us that that's absolutely unconscionable, unacceptable. And so I remember going home and telling my father, Zechanan Levracha, that it's unconscionable, that how could one eat in a tray for restaurants? True, they serve salads. So my father said that salads are served on a clean plate, even though it may be used for fleshika, non-kosher items. However, it's a cold, clean plate. And my father was essentially quoting a din in Shulchan Aruch, which, of course, I was not aware of. But whatever the case is, you have a clear din in Shulchan Aruch, but it's not obviously the appropriate thing to do. And certainly today, That would not be accepted practice, that's for sure, in all the circles that we travel in. Now, many people also err regarding, I just want to mention one or two other items since people have spoken to me about it, regarding a treif, a knife. Many people think that a knife that's treif, what you simply do, they heard this, what someone called me, told me is a baba maisa. I said, what's the baba maisa? You insert it in the ground 10 times. And if you stab the ground 10 times, he told me, everything is kosher v'yosha. That's not true. A knife has the same halacha as all kalim and has to be kashered the way it was used, the way we mentioned yesterday, kabbalah kapolto. If it became osir, if it was used with hot liquid, it became treif. Has to be kashered through hagola, through hot water. If it became osir without liquid, namely someone roasted meat and used a milchik knife, and the knife now went ahead and absorbed from hot meat without liquid, as if it were roasted in a spit or in a baking oven or something along those lines, shpud va'askala. So the knife needs liban in order to be kasher. The only time a knife can be kasher by sticking it into the ground, when a knife became also through cold food. And basically, we took a fleshig knife and cut cold butter with it. So the kasher, we stick it in the ground 10 times and that's sufficient. But if the knife is also with hot food, then we have a din of kabbalah, kapolto. That's a clear halacha, a clear gemara. With hot liquids, it has to be kasher with hot water. If it became also without liquids, then the knife, of course, requires liban, a glowing. Let's just give a rundown of just a few items that relate to Pesach. And we mentioned already metal, wood, or stone kalim can be kosher even for Pesach. We spoke about kalim that are made out of plastic or melmac or other synthetic materials should not be kosher for Pesach. You'll take a look in the Igros Meishan or Chaim Chelik Beis, Simon Tzadik Beis. Pyrex and Duralex kalim cannot be kosher for Pesach. This is discussed already by Dain Weiss, by the Svidi Eish. Glass kalim used for chametz may not be used on Pesach. However, if necessary, you can, as I mentioned yesterday, milui ve'iroi. You can immerse the glass in water over a period of 72 hours for 3 days, change the water every 24 hours. If hot chametz was used in the kalim, then this process cannot be used. That's a Mishnah Berurah and the Shad Zion. We referred to it yesterday in Siman Tov Nun Aleph, Os Kuf Tzadik Bet. Kalim that are lined with enamel, according to many poskim, have a possibility of having the same din as kli cheres, earthenware kalim, cannot be kashered. We're talking about different types of chinaware, corningware, are not kashered for Pesach. The cooking range grades should be kashered for Pesach using the form of libun, which means that the grades have to get hot so you can burn a piece of straw kash or to make a piece of tissue paper turn brown. That's again mentioned in the Mishnah Berurah. It talks about chatzuvot. The pan underneath the grate of the cooking range has to be thoroughly clean, not used for 24 hours. It's preferable they be completely covered, and according to some poskim, even kashered by having hot water poured over them. So more or less, we've discussed some of the basic halachas of hagola, of liman gomor, of liman kal, of hadacha, and also some of the practical applications in which I will discuss probably at greater length tomorrow, because this relates to items in the kitchen, which are more for the distaff side than for the individuals who are in front of me. I'm talking about ovens and microwaves and stainless steel sinks and gas ranges and what have you. So, yes, Hashem, hopefully tomorrow. So I profoundly offer you my sincere apologies for not saying the shiur tomorrow night. But, yes, Hashem, hopefully the wives will convey whatever has to be conveyed to their husbands. In any way, it doesn't really make a difference what the husband says, since Beis Lozu Ishto and their Koveya one way or the other. So there's not any nafkamina halacha lemaisa in terms of yourselves. Have a wonderful evening and continued bracha v'atzlacha v'chol ma'asiyadech.
Thank you. Yishakayach.